Good afternoon and welcome to Art Speak Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez Boyd, and we've got an action-packed afternoon filled. We're going to have fun this afternoon. We have a couple of guests in the studio today who are both writers and very creative people. First, we have Elizabeth Fisher, who is the executive director of the Writer's Place. She's going to talk about the upcoming events and the programs for the fall. So much happening with the Writer's Place. In our second half, we'll talk with Pete Doolin, who is the author of the KC Ale Trail that just recently came out. And he's also the author of a cookbook, Last Bite, 100 Simple Recipes from Kansas City's Best Chefs and Cooks. So, stay tuned for that. So let's get started. Let me welcome, first of all, Elizabeth Fisher, who, again, is the executive director of the Writer's Place. The Writer's Place is a literary center that advances and celebrates the craft of writing. So as a literary community center and gathering place for writers, readers, and the general public, they provide resources and inspiration for people in the region who care about the word as art. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Maria.
Very good. So you have been the executive director, a new position for you because you have spent a lot of your time in the nonprofit sector, right?
That is correct. I just started at the Writer's Place in March, and I became full-time in April. We had had another director before who was part-time, and this was the first full-time director we'd had in many years.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So it's exciting to be here.
Yeah. Well, and you're in the neighborhood. You're right around the corner at 3607 Pennsylvania, right?
That's right. Valentine Road in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. You know, it's for people who haven't been there, it is the castle-looking building right on the corner of Pennsylvania and
Valentine Road.
Valentine Road, yeah. Yeah, so there's always something going on at the Writer's Place, readings, signings, writing programs for youth and that. So let's talk about what's coming up for the summer. Let's sort of give people a tease about what's coming up for the fall.
Sure. In the fall, we just finished our writer's blocks, which were programs for students, and now we have our little bit of quiet time at the Writer's Place while behind the scenes we're getting ready for our fall programming. We have some really good workshops coming up. Mm-hmm. The first one is going to be on September 5th, and it happens to be about creative nonfiction. We have about 15 sessions this fall, ranging from poetry, dystopian fiction, creative nonfiction, yeah, historical fiction, just so many different genres, and yeah, a wide variety of instructors who have received excellent reviews. Mm-hmm. And we're using topics that have been requested by past workshop participants. Mm-hmm. And people who haven't been participating in workshops because they wanted these topics.
Wow.
So we're very excited about that, and we'll be having these up on our website shortly.
So you listen to the community, what they want, how to best serve the writing community?
Very much. Uh-huh. So, yes. Yeah. The writing community is constantly changing,
yeah,
especially in the over 20 years since we began.
Uh-huh.
It was originally, the Writer's Place was a place for people who were intending to be published in books or literary journals,
mm-hmm,
and that was really the ultimate destination for writers. But that has changed so much since 1992, and we'll hear about that more from our next guest, about how important the internet has become to writers,
yeah,
blogging, etc. And so we are addressing those changes,
mm-hmm,
in the publishing community,
mm-hmm,
and also finding people who haven't already discovered that they are writers or who think they might be writers,
yeah,
and want to go in a totally different direction from ever being published. We're doing things like writing an ethical will in one of,
mm-hmm,
our workshops.
Wow.
For someone
That's
who wants to
stuff.
Leave a written legacy,
mm-hmm,
for their family.
Well, and I think sometimes that sort of gets overlooked as part of writing. I mean, sometimes that's just overlooked as sort of more practical or legal, you know. But it's an important part to, you know, to leaving a will and leaving a legacy and that sort of thing. I mean,
that's right.
The language has to be just right.
Using the gifts of expression and really working on the gifts of expression, which have also changed so much since we started. Our modes of communication are different.
Yeah.
And the act of writing requires a really sustained focus that is different from a lot of the ways we communicate now.
Yeah, and I know the writer's place is a good way to sort of meet with other writers and sort of kind of look at what you've written, maybe do a little kind of critique or suggestions, too. I mean, there's certain groups that come together.
That's right. We have many writers' groups who use our facilities and get together, and to have our building at your service for your writers' group, you just need to be a member of the Writers' Place, so you can get more information about that at our website, which is writersplace.org. And they meet weekly. We have an interesting one that I just learned about recently, and I'm still very much in the learning process about the many, many things that are going on day and night nights and weekends when I'm not necessarily in the building. There are writers getting together and talking about various things, and we have one person who's a member who has a poetry in prison program at Lansing, and he works with another organization to do that, and he actually is working on bringing a group of his poets he works with to do a reading as part of our series that we do in the Johnson County Library System. So that's coming up next year. But it turns out that after his poets are released from prison, he is inviting them to his poetry group that meets once a month. So it is our building is a home for such a wide variety of people and ages, and we're really unique in that respect in the region. There's a lot going on in the literary community in Kansas City, all over, for all ages. And we are partners with many different organizations.
Well, and not only that, I mean, the facility itself just lends itself to so many wonderful events. I know that, you know, book signings and readings and that, you know, book clubs and that sort of thing that come together and the writing programs. But I also realized, too, that it has a gallery, an art gallery, so that's another benefit. And then just recently, a group formed in the basement, the Midwest.
Yes, the Midwest Dramatist Center. Is it's like having a bunch of really smart kids living in the basement. Even though they actually, some of them are my contemporaries, but they're a group of playwrights who are there, again, mostly evenings and weekends, and they are writing plays, rehearsing, and sometimes they come upstairs and we get to hear them rehearsing, and it's really exciting. And many of them had pieces in the Fringe this past month. So we are connected to that playwriting community, and we're working on getting some workshops together that relate to playwriting. An upcoming event that is in partnership with Literacy Kansas City and with the Kansas City Public Library is The Power of Reading and Writing, which will take place in September. It will feature Frank Higgins, who is a playwright, Janae Osterheld from The Star, and two of our young writers who are in high school, who are since they are minors, I'm not going to say their names, but they are a very, very appealing pair of twins who have just blown our minds with their talent. And so they will be reading, and then Literacy Kansas City will be providing some readers who have recently learned to read.
That is a powerful. I've been to those programs at the public library, and you know, some things that we take for granted are just amazing when people discover the power of reading.
And writing.
Now, you talked about the conference that's coming up next month, the Power of
The Power of Words is a That is a program where we are an underwriter, and it is in September. It's at Unity Village.
Yeah.
And it is part of the transformative language way of using language. Mm-hmm. It's just a really complex and interesting, and it sounds very enjoyable. I can't wait to see what it's like myself.
Right.
And
right.
That is coming up in September.
I do have a couple of guests booked for the show in September that are going to appear here on the show.
Oh, great.
And, you know, it's just a wonderful gathering of people, but also just at Unity Village, which is in Lee Summit, it's maybe, 15 minutes away from downtown.
Mm-hmm.
It just takes you to a whole different place. It's sort of got a more European sort of architecture to it, and it's fountains and roses. So I think there's a part of that will inspire people,
once
they are there and meet one another and just kind of pick a tree and go, ride or something.
Right.
So that's coming up next month. And now for youths in the community, what sort of programs do you have going on? I know that there was a partnership, I think, with Natasha L. Scurry and Priest Holmes that were working with children.
Yes, and that was in 2014, and we took that program and moved, and we were hosting it in our building from what I've heard. We've taken that and changed it into a program where local writers are going into schools and working with children in the schools with the students. So Jose Faust, for instance, our board chair, is participating in that. And then we also have In Our Own Words, which is a really exciting program. It uses a number of local writers, and it's led by Judith Taus Roberts, a really gifted educator. And we work with a number of schools. I believe the last count was 12. And there are facilitated workshops that are facilitated by people who are professional writers. And then there's a culminating event where the kids come and read their poetry. Mm-hmm. And it's very moving.
Yeah.
And then we publish an anthology each year of their work.
And I think it's really important to cultivate that next generation of writers and people who enjoy literature.
Well, it absolutely is. And the role of creative writing is essential in that. If you talk to local employers, or not just local, but employers in general, they lament the lack of writing skills that they see in their employees.
Yeah.
And what we have read is that research shows that by cultivating creative writing, and it overcomes the fear of writing or the other intimidating factors that have to do with writing, and it actually opens the door for improved academic and professional writing later in life. So we use our work to build that creative writing joy, and also, again, the sustained focus, the discipline that's required along with the joy.
Well, I know I'm one of the founders of the Latina Writers Collective, and we're very fortunate to have a space out of the Writer's Place. Again, the Writer's Place website is writersplace.org.
That's right.
And they're at 3607 Pennsylvania. And I'm talking with Elizabeth Fisher, who is the executive director of the Writer's Place. Now, do you have... I know from time to time there are special events, such as Mary Frances Wagner puts together, along with Charles Ferrugia, an Italian sort of reading that maybe includes food and that sort of thing with readings.
Yes, we've had a number of programs over the years called our Celebrations Program, and Mary Frances does coordinate that and does an outstanding job. And this year we have some really great events coming up. The season begins in the fall, so we will have a Dia de los Muertos event, which receives really great reviews from our audiences, and we will have visiting readers, this is not part of the celebrations, but I do want to mention this, that we will have an event on August 21st where we're going to have two visitors from California who are from the San Pedro Review. Mm-hmm. They will be here, and they'll be reading with Greg Field. And the other celebrations events will be coming later in the fall,
mm-hmm.
and I am finding my notes, which I faithfully brought with me.
I do the same thing, and then I find it like stuck on my head on a post-it or something.
I should have it all memorized, but it hasn't happened yet.
Well, let's just say, I mean, there's something going on almost every day of the month.
No, that's true. We have a very busy calendar. There is somebody using the building. Oh, and then we also have write-ins, and this was part of the original vision of the organization when Gloria Vando Hickok and her husband mm-hmm. Bill founded it, was to have the Writer's Place be a place where people could come and actually write. Mm-hmm. And it is a lovely building, and it's very comfortable, and so we're expanding our write-in times where members can just come, find a chair and a table, and we have computers mm-hmm. with office mm-hmm. programs, so you can have Word there.
A library.
And just write. And so we're currently doing those on Tuesday and Thursday evenings and opening up more during mm-hmm. the days and Wednesday afternoons, opening up more times, and we're finding volunteers mm-hmm. who are actual writers who are using this as a way to build their own discipline mm-hmm. and practice, mm-hmm. and then inviting their friends and inviting other writers from the community to come in. So it's going well. The write-ins are going well.
You know, I with that write-in, too, is there an opportunity for the writer to read the work aloud in front of a small audience, or maybe just, you know, a small group, so that they sort of have a performance that's partnered with the work, and not by performance, I guess I should say, but maybe, you know, just help them articulate the words and the work.
Yes, and that performance aspect is, I mean, really, what we're talking about here is providing a place where you can come, you can identify yourself as a writer, first mm-hmm. of all, or mm-hmm. it's just somebody mm-hmm. who wants to write, mm-hmm. and then come and write, and then join a writer's group where you mm-hmm. receive the critique and the support that you need, and you can practice performing, and then you can ask to be part of one of our readings, and we have some where you need to make an application and be considered by a group. We have others that are open mics where anybody can come mm-hmm. and build that mm-hmm. comfort level.
Does that also include spoken word? Do you all have programs or our workshops for spoken word?
We do some cooperative work with spoken word organizations and provide rehearsal space and so on, mm-hmm. and it's something where we're looking at more in-depth partnerships mm-hmm. for spoken word.
Now, Elizabeth, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you yourself, are you a writer?
I write, but I don't show it to anybody just not there.
Yeah.
But I want to support other people, and that's mm-hmm. the role of the Writer's Place, is to support people who are ready to share.
Yeah. I get that. You know, it takes an act of courage, you know, really to write and then to share the work, and, you know, either by just reading the work, having another set of eyes, a pair of eyes to look at the work, or reading it aloud.
I think
it's really
it takes a huge amount of courage, and you need to silence your inner critic, and you need to really work hard to produce something that you're proud or able to share. So I am so in awe of our writers mm-hmm. who come mm-hmm. in and who are willing mm-hmm. to do that.
How many members do you have?
We have about 300.
Wow.
And we are working on increasing that number.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to the website, you will see that we are increasing our membership benefits.
Yeah.
Our membership is very reasonably priced. And if you do a write-in, you can kind of do a membership on a layaway plan.
I like that. I believe for this past Fringe Festival that took place, that there was several other writers from the Writer's Place, poets and that performed their work on stage with musicians and dancers.
That's right. That was the Touch of Mary Frances Wagner who organized that, and again received wonderful reviews. And that's another thing that we do at our celebrations events, is that we do try to bring in other media as well as the writing, because I mean, not only is it really just an interesting cultural event, but having that those other senses stimulated opens our mind so that we can hear better what is being shared in the poetry. And you mentioned our gallery. Our gallery has, we have a new curator. In fact, I'm going to meet with her tomorrow, and so you'll be seeing some interesting things on our walls. Mm-hmm. And we work with Sharon Eicher, another longtime volunteer for the Writers' Place, who works on her own with students,
she's phenomenal.
She's wonderful. I mean, we just have these really, and not only are they really wonderful, talented people, but they're really nice and welcoming. Mm-hmm. And before I worked for the Writer's Place, I always thought that everyone seemed a little aloof, which I later, as soon as I got there, I realized, no, they were just shy introverts who are used to, you know, sitting by themselves writing. And so once you enter, you find that people are really very welcoming and supportive. So, so Sharon has these shows on our second floor with student artists. Mm-hmm. And so, again, stimulating these other senses so that our vortexes are more open to the written and spoken word.
And I think she's got a chapbook that's coming out fairly soon, right?
Sometime this month. I should know that, too.
But, you know, I know that you're just not just staying inside the walls of the Writer's Place. Again, with the Fringe Festival, the performances took place near Union Station.
That's right, at the Bollinger Center. Yeah. No, we're definitely not only within our building. We have the Uptown Arts Bar hosts an event.
The Neon Gallery.
Once a month, the Neon Gallery, every quarter. I mentioned the Johnson County Library. We have a fabulous series there, the Thomas C.V. Wilson Reading Series, that's hosted by Thomas E.V. Wilson's widow, Jeannie Wilson, who is also a wonderful writer, and that's once a month so that we can reach people who don't live in Midtown, who or who, for whatever reason, want to go to that, and I attend those events whenever I can as well. We have an event coming up in September that we do annually, Friday, September 4th. It is the National Recovery Reading at Open Mic. Mm-hmm. So I believe Charles Ferruzza will be there. And
he's dynamite. I just love that man. Hello, Charles.
Yes, long, long time. Well, and also one of several previous directors I've mentioned in the course of this discussion.
But, you know, one of the readings that attracts a huge number of people, of an audience, is the queer writers.
Yes, and that has been in the reading. Spring, and that is part of our celebration series. Thank you. And that one, I was unable to attend. I was at another literary event that night, but I'm really sorry I missed that one, because I hear that people were stamping their feet and so filled with applause.
Breaking windows, throwing furniture. it was great. The police were called in.
Not quite very civilized. Very civilized. But we received, you know, letters of gratitude about providing a place where different audiences who can be marginalized have a safe, comfortable, and celebratory place.
Everyone has a voice there at the Writer's Place.
That's right. Good. That's right.
And I know our good friend Miguel Morales and Wayne Courtois is a part of that group. Jen Harris and just a few others.
Annette Billings and Sandra Moran.
Good people.
Yeah, very good.
Good people.
And then we also have our Riverfront readings, and this is actually the Riverfront readings predated the Writer's Place.
Yeah.
And were Phil Miller, who is no longer with us, but he was part of it, and they have continued for decades, and they have a really interesting series of readings coming up this fall.
Shout out to Phyllis Becker, Sylvia Koffler.
Yes, Phyllis Becker. Yes.
I can't think of anyone else.
Yes, Carl Bettis. Rhiannon Ross, our staff member, wonderful person. Again, another example of a really welcoming, kind person.
Yeah, this is good for the community. This is good for the community of writers.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
Is there anything else that you want to say before we head off here?
Well, the one thing I haven't mentioned is a really a program we're particularly proud of. It's in partnership with the Church of the Resurrection. It's part of their ResVets program, which supports returning veterans. And we receive support. We have received support from the Missouri Humanities Council for this. It's a workshop that is held this spring. It was held at the World War I Memorial, and it's not only for veterans, but it's also for their families. And once again, our community of writers provide workshop facilitation and so on, so that these stories, these things can be shared and can be can be shared with their family in a very supportive way. And then the veterans continue to meet on an ongoing basis in the Kansas City Public Library facilities around town closer to where they are. So we're waiting to see what happens for that next year.
Excellent. Very good. Good work in the community. Thank you so much, Elizabeth Fisher, for joining me on ArtSpeak Radio.
Well, thank you. I hope that you'll have me back again.
Oh, absolutely.
So that I can do it.
Absolutely. You're in the neighborhood. I can walk over there right now.
Now that I've done it once, I'm fine.
You're fine. You're fabulous.
Thank you.
Well, stay tuned. We'll be right back with Pete Doolin. To ArtSpeak Radio on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Maria Vasquez-Boyd, and I'm here with the wonderfully talented Pete Doolin, who is the author of Casey Ale Trail, where he guides readers on his exploration of 23 craft breweries right here in Greater Kansas City and the surrounding region. He also is the author of a cookbook, Last Bite, 100 Simple Recipes from Kansas City's Best Chefs and Cooks, which includes recipes, color food photography by Roy Inman, and portraits. And so we're going to talk about the Casey Ale Trail with dear Pete. Welcome, Pete.
Hi there. Good afternoon.
It's good to see you, my friend. You have been writing and shooting photographs for a long time, professionally for newspapers, magazines, and all that. And now you've got your second book, Casey Ale Trail. Let's talk about that.
Sure.
23 craft breweries.
Yeah, there's quite a few. So the book covers these breweries in Greater Kansas City, as well as Lawrence, Topeka, Manhattan, and Springfield. But the majority of them are based around Kansas City, as far north as Liberty and Weston, and as far south as Martin City. So there's quite a few breweries.
Will people be surprised to find out that there is a brewery in Liberty, Missouri? I mean, once they go through your book?
I hope that they aren't. I hope that they heard of it and better yet visited. Rock and Run Brewery is based in Liberty, and it's a great brew pub up there in the Northland. Besides Rock and Run and Liberty, there's also Cinderblock Brewery and the Big Rip Brewery, both of which are in North Kansas City. And I think it's great that there's plenty of room for more breweries to open up throughout Kansas City in all different areas.
Well, as a food person yourself, who cooks very often and did that professionally, was this sort of a natural direction for you to go, pairing food with beer and then writing about the different ales?
It felt natural because it's a subject matter that I enjoy. I enjoy drinking craft beer. I have for a long time. Of course, Boulevard started 26 years ago.
I can't believe it's been that long.
Yeah. They've been a mainstay in the Kansas City brewing community. And of course, I've tried craft beers from other parts of the country through my travels. And I lived in Boston for 3 years, so I got great exposure to craft beers in New England. And when I came back to Kansas City, largely Boulevard was the main local beer available.
But
in recent years, and that's not to say that there have been some other brew pubs around that brew, like McCoy's in Westport and 75th Street Brewery as well. But in recent years, the past 2 to 3 years, we've seen a new wave of startup craft breweries emerge. And the idea for the book really kind of came from the anniversary for Boulevard Brewing, when it reached its 25th anniversary. And at the same time, Free State Brewing in Lawrence reached its 25th anniversary. And that kind of gave me the idea when I was thinking about it in late 2013 what exactly has happened in the past 25 years.
And
the book's kind of a snapshot of what's happening now.
But it's even more than that, because you've done a lot of research and you actually have a blog. So it's not just, for people who are just tuned in, it's not about, not only just tasting the different the beers locally in that, but you also have an understanding of what it takes to make the beer. Like, I recently looked at your blog where you said you visited Royal Hops, which is a hops farm here in Edgerton, in Edgerton, Missouri. So it's not just about, I'm going to go try this, but you really do know what you're writing about.
Well, I think that's just the hallmark of a writer
a good writer
that does their homework, really.
Yes,
I'm not a home brewer by any means. I've never tried that. I'll leave that to people that have more time, money, and passion for it. or professionals to do it. But as a writer, I like to really learn about the people and the businesses that are doing interesting things in Kansas City. So, like with Royal Hops, I actually had a friend of mine. Her father's involved as a partner in that hops farm. And went up for an open house, and I just thought it would be interesting to explore, because there really aren't abundant hops farms in the Midwest. And as it turned out, Royal Hops was working with Boulevard Brewing, and yesterday Boulevard Brewing announced that they used some of those locally grown hops in their pale ale, which is the first beer that Boulevard released.
Right.
And so they're doing a limited edition release of that beer using those hops.
So during you have a trail, a trail. Where does it start and where does it end?
Well, it's kind of like the, choose your own adventure books.
Right.
when you're a kid, you can really start and anywhere. So I think some of the first breweries that I wrote about when I was beginning the book, actually I started with the breweries in North Kansas City, just because they were new and they're just getting started, and I was really intrigued by their story. And then I just kind of branched out from there and kind of hopscotched all over the city. Like I said earlier, as far north as Liberty and then Martin City. You have KC Brewing or KC Beer Company in Waldo. In Westport, there's a couple. And then it was also fun to plan some road trips last summer in 2014 and head out to Lawrence, Topeka, Manhattan, and in Springfield, and include kind of those prominent breweries like Mother's Brewing in Springfield, Tallgrass, Little Apple Brewing, Free State. And because I think while they're a little bit farther out, like many of them do have distribution in Kansas City, and I just felt that they add something to our regional brewing community.
So, is there a second book? I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate here. Is there a second book that you're kind of playing with, just because now you've got this one underway and maybe try some other regions?
Well, I probably
I know you're a local boy, but
I do like supporting local.
Yeah.
If the opportunity presented itself from a publisher, then I would certainly be interested in covering other regions of the country, whether it were food, beer. I do have plans to update this book, because as soon as it came out, it's kind of dated, because this year alone there are five breweries that are opening up in Kansas City.
Yeah. But now you can keep up with that in some ways through your blog, right?
Right, through the blog. I have a blog on both kcaletrail.com as well as petedoolin.com, where I post content there about local food and beer. And then I write for several local and regional publications to post stories also.
Was there a general consensus about why people start these breweries, why they brew beer and then want to, when you you know, make it for wider audience?
I think by and large it starts with a personal interest in brewing,
sort of a passion.
Yeah, most if not all of the breweries they start as home brewers. John McDonald did. I think every single brewer that I know in town, they started as a home brewer at some point, and then through you know, a combination of putting together the right business plan and investment and just a lot of hard work and sweat, started a brewery. And they can take all different forms and sizes, from a brew pub to a brewery with a tap room to production brewery, such as Boulevard, where their main focus is producing beer in bottles, cans, kegs that are sold through a distributor to a distributor that reaches a wider market. But again, I think it comes back to people that really care about beer and producing a good quality product. If it's not good quality, then it's not going to find an audience. And so, and breweries aren't cheap to start. So.
I can only imagine the cost.
Yeah.
You know, sounds like a good idea, but wow. You know, I want to ask you, with the latest publication, KC Ale Trail, you have events that are scheduled. You've done some events in the past. What do you have that's coming up that our listeners should know about?
Great question. I actually have an event coming up next week on Tuesday, August the 11th, in the evening. I think it's at 6:30 at Kansas City Central Library. And there, Stephen Woolfolk from the library will be the moderator. I'll be on the panel, as well as some brewers from Torn Label Brewing and the Big Rip, two of the newer breweries. And we'll talk about the book, as well as craft brewing and how those breweries started up. And the breweries will also be offering samples of their beer as well. So we'll continue.
Wow. And again, that's August 11th?
Yes.
Very good. Now, some of the other events that you've done were pretty much local. What did I see on your blog? Let's see. Well, you've been to Kansas City, Lawrence, Topeka, and Manhattan, but you'll pretty much go to where all the breweries are and maybe meet people, talk to people, and maybe do you sign books there and bring your books with you?
I do. Yeah. So I've done a variety of events. So I've done book signings and tastings at a brewery where, you know, it kind of spotlights the brewery and their beers. I'll meet people, talk about the book, sign the book. I've also done other events like beer food pairings.
Right, right.
So I did one earlier this year at Happy Gillis, where we featured beers from Tallgrass Brewing out of Manhattan, and I think there was four or five courses, and the chef Josh Ians paired food with each of the beers for each course, and then we got to drink the beer as well. So there's, you know, there's a variety of different types of events that I've done.
Yeah.
And that's the fun part about a book like this is that it's not limited to just doing a book signing in a bookstore and hoping people show up.
Yeah.
It's more interactive.
Interactive. I like that. And it is a lovely book. It's got some wonderful photographs, you know, of not only the people that that you've met along the way, Martin City Brewing Company, which, you know, they started in one building out there off 135th Street.
Right, right.
Now, did they expand to across the street, or what's happening with them?
In a sense, they did. So they started as a pub, and they didn't have the space or the capital to open the brewery that they wanted to of the scale. So they started out with a pub where they could serve high-quality, upscale pub fare, and then beers produced by breweries from elsewhere around the country. And then a year or two later, they acquired space next door and built their brewery space as well as a wood-fired pizza restaurant. And so in that building, they produce their own beers, which are served on tap at the pizza restaurant. Since then, they've also secured a distribution agreement. So a distributor distributes some of their beers to area bars and restaurants. And like other younger breweries around town that have gotten the distribution agreement, they've also gotten into a barrel aging program to produce some limited edition or special release beers. So in a short span of time, breweries like Torn Label and Martin City have gotten pretty sophisticated.
You know, I'm again going through this book. You will have the book available for your event August 11th, and on your website too, which I will tell listeners, it's Pete Doolin. That's D like in David, U L I N, PeteDoolin.com to get a little bit more information. And I think through that website they can also kind of take a peek at the book itself.
Right, right. Yeah, it's so there's a little bit about the book on PeteDoolin.com as well as KCAleTrail.com, where you can look at some of the pages in there, the table of contents, and some of the photos, and then you can order the book online, or you can go to retailers that are listed on the website.
Now, how different is this from well, this is much different book than your last bite, 100 simple recipes from Kansas City best chefs and cooks. Very different in terms of the content or the style, or what did you do differently perhaps with this book?
There's quite a bit different. So with KCAle Trail, it involved you know, first-hand research. And I always joke, you know, research is really hard. But, you know, visiting each of the breweries, meeting with the owners, brewers, to learn their story, shooting the photographs. It was really, because of the skill set that I have, I was able to really develop this project from beginning to end. Because I have a background in writing and editing, but as well as design and print production.
You are a renaissance man. You really are.
Well, it's I'm lucky to have the right skill set to be able to pull a project like this together.
Yeah,
so I worked with a local designer, Eric Scotland, who did the design and production of the book, and then it was locally printed by Walsworth Publishing, and because of my print background, I was able to actually be there on press and kind of see it through to the finish. Whereas the other book, Last Bite, that was an outgrowth of a recipe column that I had at the Kansas City Star magazine for 3 years, and Roy Inman shot all the photographs for that. The recipes ran in the paper. And after 3 years, we had over 100 recipes on file, and I pitched the book division editor at the time the idea of pulling those recipes off the shelf and making a book out of it.
So you have a lot more control with this one.
Absolutely.
Do you find that with the research and the trips that you've made, do you think Kansas City is a pretty good contender for one of the top local breweries and, local microbrews?
I think Kansas City is quickly becoming an up-and-coming craft brewing destination. There are certainly other cities around the country, such as Portland, San Diego.
I'm heading there the end of this month, yes.
The craft brewing has been well-established there for 10 or more years, and you have a much greater density. To the east, St. Louis is probably about 5 years ahead in terms of the number of craft breweries. Of course, there you have Anheuser-Busch, that's been established for a long time, and people kind of peeling off from there to start their own breweries. So Kansas City has grown very quickly in terms of new craft breweries in the past few years, and there's plenty of room to catch up both in the number of breweries, the variety of offerings, and I think the future is bright for local brewing.
It's not your dad's beer anymore. It's not the Hams from the land of sky blue waters, right?
Right. Yeah, it's. I think that's part of what has spurred the growth of craft brewing as a business, as an industry nationwide, and we're talking, in the billions in terms of growth. The craft brewing segment is growing quicker than other segments in beer overall. And part of it is that consumer tastes are changing in the same way that people's tastes are changing as far as food, and they want bigger, bolder flavors. They're interested in locally grown foods. The same trends and tastes apply to craft brewing as well. People, you've got a couple of generations that don't want to drink the macro beer that is widely available, and so you've got people that want to have something that's brewed locally or offers a different taste, aroma, a different experience, and that's largely driving a lot of demand too.
Is there sort of something that's in popular right now in terms of the flavor? I mean, I know that, for instance, bacon is a huge a flavor for a number of things. I've even seen it, with ice cream and that sort of thing. But is there does the beer follow that sort of trend too?
Yeah, certainly. So beers come in different styles, and probably the most popular style right now is IPA, India Pale Ale. So IPAs are tend to be a little bit more bitter and aromatic because of the use of hops. We were talking about hops from Royal Hops earlier. While there are hop farms in different parts of the country, mostly in the Pacific Northwest, as well as in Europe and Germany, New Zealand, and IPA as a style really depends on different varieties of hops to give it a little bit of bitterness that balances out the sweetness and caramel notes in beer, but also adds aroma and flavor. And depending on the combination of hops, you can get anything from pine rosin note to it, to citrus, grapefruit, and variations in between.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really popular style of beer that you'll see in many different forms. Another type of beer, it's not a style per se, but it's sours, which really refers to the taste and the, mm-hmm. you know, the more aesthetic properties of the beer, is another kind of popular category.
Mm-hmm.
And you're seeing local breweries that are producing sours that can appear like a farmhouse saison style, mm-hmm. or an ale. And those are beers that I've really gotten into lately because they are strikingly different from you know, a pilsner and
mm-hmm.
ale.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just, they're an acquired taste. It's not for everybody.
Right.
But it's something that I really enjoy.
Well, you know, I would never ask you if you have a favorite label. Maybe afterwards, when we're off here. But what do you lean towards? What is it that you prefer? And of course, I guess it depends on, you know, if you're pairing it with food. But what are some
sure. I'm a pretty equal opportunity. it's got to be equality.
Equal opportunity beer drinker.
First and foremost, but it's, you know, it depends on the time of year. So it's, beer can be is seasonal just as much as food is. And so when it's, you know, hot out and it's, you know, 95.